Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello and welcome back to the Prep to Pro NBA Draft Podcast. My name is Ben Pfeiffer, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host Max Carlin. Max, how's it going?
Doing well, Ben. I'm excited for today's episode. How are you?
I'm doing well, and I'm also excited for today's episode, guys. We have a pretty cool guest on today, our good friend John Chepkevich, who is Director of Scouting at PBC, or Pro Basketball Combine, which we're going to talk all about today. So John, how's it going today?
Hey guys, how's it going? Appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, John, so for people who don't know what PBC is, do you want to give a brief overview on what it is you guys do as a part of the pre-draft process?
As sports keep coming back, so does your chance to bet on them with our exclusive wagering partner, betonline.ag. Major League Baseball will soon be in full swing, and there are no shortage of ways to get in on the action. BetOnline has all the odds, futures, and props for you to bet on. Also, tune in as Floyd Money Mayweather joins the BetOnline team in a new segment called The Ice is Right, where he talks about his expansive jewelry collection. He'll give you the chance to win some great prizes and bet on the cost of his bling. Visit betonline.ag to check out all the odds and up-to-date sports news. Don't forget to sign up and take advantage of all the welcome back sports bonuses. BetOnline, your online wagering experts.
Yeah, sure. So essentially a few years ago when the new CBA kicked in and two-way contracts came into the fold, Jake Kelfer, who started the PBC, kind of saw an opportunity there where the NBA draft combine itself was only hosting, you know, 60 to 70 guys, and there were going to be 60 additional roster spots in the NBA. So a lot of fringe prospects who are still pretty talented needed a platform to kind of show what they bring to the table in an intimate environment in front of NBA personnel. So Jake started that thing shortly thereafter, and I jumped on board in year two. And it essentially just functions as a secondary combine for guys that are kind of in the two-way contract wheelhouse and or might be pretty good overseas players, or maybe some guys that, you know, go undrafted and eventually fight their way into the NBA. So it's been really cool to be a part of that and kind of, you know, see a few classes of the PBC come through and some guys go on to have really successful starts to their careers.
Yeah, over the first few years, What have you found to be the most valuable parts of being involved in what you do over there?
Yeah, so I think, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is what I was just saying about giving somewhat overlooked players a platform to kind of show what they bring to the table in front of these NBA teams, right? Because, you know, otherwise they might get a handful of workouts here and there where they travel to a team site and work out for one specific team. But, you know, it's cool to be able to give them a chance to get in front of about 25 NBA teams and kind of have that stage in the pre-draft process that maybe they wouldn't have gotten otherwise. Another thing that's kind of come to light more so in the past couple of years is now that guys can test the waters and have an agent, there's a lot more flexibility in us being able to have underclassmen attend the event and kind of use it as a means to gather as much information as possible to make the best stay or go decision for them. So we've had our handful of underclassmen that come through that, you know, aren't really sure if they're ready to go pro or if going back to school makes sense. And, you know, I really enjoy being able to help them make the best decisions for them and how they end up starting their pro careers. And then from a personal perspective and, you know, self-growth within the sphere of talent evaluation, I really appreciate, you know, being able to be up close in person with these prospects, kind of get to know them off the court a little bit, get a feel for, like, you know, who they are as people as well. And then also kind of get to grow and develop relationships with the agents of these players, kind of getting to know those guys and the NBA team personnel who are in attendance and everything like that. The relationships is definitely like one of the biggest personal upsides to being involved in the PBC for me.
Yeah. One of the things that we obviously talk about a lot on this podcast is tracking growth over years on the court. But it, especially with the ability to test the waters now, what you can kind of get into is tracking personal growth over years. So are there any guys that have been multi-time PBC guys, or is it just that, you know, you talk to an upperclassman and then he goes back and maybe he doesn't come back to you guys, but you know, you're still in touch and you can see personal growth? Have there been any notable examples of that?
Yeah, I mean, the prime example of that, I would say, is a guy that you guys are particularly fond of in Desmond Bane. So Desmond tested the draft waters last year. And, you know, as you guys will probably recall, he wasn't like particularly high on a lot of mainstream draft boards at that time. But, you know, we were pretty excited to have him at the PBC and really liked what he brought to the table from what we saw on film and in the numbers and everything like that. And once he got to the PBC, we became even bigger fans of him, kind of based, you know, A, on his performance there. Like, he kicked ass at the PBC. He, you know, performed well athletically in all the shooting drills, in the scrimmages. He was definitely a standout, but also kind of getting to know him and talk to him and like get an understanding of like, you know, what he was personally going through and making this decision, right? Like, I still remember myself and Jake and Desmond going to In-N-Out Burger after one of the days of the PBC and just like talking through his whole mindset on the decision, right? Because, you know, if you guys recall, TCU wasn't particularly like projected to be a very good team this year, right? A lot of people had them projected to finish last in the Big 12, and you know, Kevin Samuel was like the only kind of main guy coming back for them aside from Desmond if he were to return, right? So it's kind of a tricky decision for him where he, you know, he was getting a lot of interest as far as like getting a two-way or something. And, you know, that's a perfectly fine avenue for starting your career if you want to leave as a junior and get a two-way and, you know, kind of work your way up from there, make a couple hundred grand off the bat if you play your days up at the NBA. But, you know, as we were going back and forth and talking about it, like, you know, in my gut, based on me really liking him as a prospect, like, I wanted to, you know, I thought he could do it if he went pro. He could, you know, be perfectly serviceable and claw his way up. But, like, you know, Desmond got this feedback from these NBA guys, evaluated the situation. And I think a thing that often gets lost is, like, in these stay or go decisions, the context of like how your role or opportunity might change the following year is often like the biggest thing in whether you'll actually be able to boost your stock or not, right? Like, you hear guys, you know, some guys in the media saying, oh, look, if he comes back, then maybe he'll be a first round pick, but there's not a lot of basis to it a lot of the time. With Desmond, his teammate Alex Robinson, who was also a PBC guy who I'm fond of, but Alex Robinson leaving TCU actually opened things up a lot for Desmond Bane to take on more of an on-ball role and kind of grow and develop, like you were alluding to earlier. He, you know, got more of a chance to like run pick and rolls and kind of facilitate offense for others and like show that he can handle the ball, pass the ball. So Desmond's a guy that I've, you know, kept in touch with here and there, and he's one that the growth particularly stands out. And like, he made that decision to return, and it was the right decision for him. He's had an awesome senior year, and it looks like, you know, his draft status has certainly climbed, and he's in a good position right now.
Yeah, I mean, the decision to stay in the draft or go back to school is it's definitely, I think, there's a lot more context that comes into play than people give it credit for. So I mean, like, what is it like to be involved in those decisions? What do you take into account when sort of advising a guy whether or not it would be beneficial to stay in school or go pro?
Yeah, it's kind of tricky. Like, we try not to get too far into, like, you know, the advising side. Like, we can kind of give our 2 cents, but oftentimes, you know, it comes down to them and the agent and the family. But, you know, when we kick in our input, I think it comes down to, like, you know, kind of what I was talking through with Desmond, like, what's the context of your return situation from, like, a team perspective? Like, are you really going to be able to see a major uptick in usage or, like, you know, incoming players that kind of meld nicely with what you bring to the table that might open things up for you, right? Like, is that context favorable for you or not? Like, what's your sort of relationship like with the coaching staff? Like, you know, is it a situation that makes sense to go back for you personally? Or, you know, do you have other off-court factors that come into play too, right? Like, we recently saw, you know, Isaiah Mike and Xavier Tillman are both guys who were on the PBC remote film room, which we'll get into a little bit later, but both of those guys are fathers, right? So sometimes there are other factors to kind of take into account for your stay or go decision where, you know, it might kind of, you know, push you towards starting your career a little bit earlier, and that's okay. Like, every player that comes through is unique in their circumstances, and kind of just taking into account all those different factors and making the best decision for them is what's most important.
So in, you know, like, you know, obviously, you know, you're being very personal and, you know, up close with these players in making your decisions, you know, not only, you know, watching them, you know, deciding which players, you know, have at PBC, but, you know, watching them perform at PBC and, you know, eventually, like, giving them some sort of advice and building relationships. You know, on your side of things, what have you learned, you know, from doing all of, from your, like, direct involvement with these players at PBC, you know, like, as a scout, as, like, an evaluator, as just a person? So.
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely has helped give me a sense of, like, what teams tend to value with these fringe guys, right? Like, the background and intel side is definitely really important there. Like, you get a feel for, like, if a guy is, you know, not a bona fide, like, stud prospect that's, you know, going to go in the first round, like, oftentimes they really need to kind of have everything buttoned up off the court, right? Like, you don't want any other red flags popping up. Like, that can totally derail your opportunity, because, like, if you're already, you know, kind of a fringe prospect in the NBA's eyes, if you have any extra baggage coming with, then, you know, that's going to kind of derail you. Also, you kind of get a feel for, like, you know, certain things. Like, if you're a small mid-major guard, like, it's going to be an uphill battle, right? If you're an undersized mid-major guard, even if, like, you show out and kick ass, like, in that kind of setting, like, you're starting from a really tough spot, because there's a, you know, inherent bias against small guards who play in small conferences, and that it's not without reason, but, like, it's tricky, right? So you kind of start to learn those kind of things and kind of get also a better understanding of the extent with which, like, agency plays a huge role in a lot of this stuff, right? Like, once you get past the first round, like, you know, there's a lot that comes into play with, like, you know, this agent or this agency has a good relationship with this team, this G League team, this overseas team. And, like, you know, sometimes that in and of itself can kind of help, you know, get the foot in the door for some players here and there, right? And there's a lot more that goes on behind the scenes there with the agency side of things than I think I had an understanding of before, you know, going into the PBC and getting involved. And I definitely, like, value having gained a better understanding of that side of the business, because it is pretty important, but it's not something that, like, most people have that much exposure to, you know.
I think that's a worthwhile point, because I mean, you I think people generally are kind of inclined to think that the draft is maybe, I mean, there's some variance with how different teams, different people evaluate different players. But I think some people definitely think, or maybe most think, that it's more or less, you know, the 60 most talented guys are going to be drafted. But there really is, there are so many more factors that go into that, whether it's just, I mean, especially when you get beyond, say, the 45th pick or something like that.
Yeah.
Is someone willing to take a two-way?
Right.
What's the relationship with the agent? You know, how do they fit into organizational ethos? And so people will bring up things like, you know, it's insane that Terrence Davis went undrafted. And that's certainly true.
Yep.
Like, it is insane that Terrence Davis went undrafted, and he should have, I mean, probably been a first round pick.
That's the exact example that I was thinking of as you started talking through that.
But yeah, but you know, he could have been drafted.
Yeah,
it's not like,
that's right.
It's not like all 30 teams thought Terrence Davis was an undraftable player.
Right. He wouldn't commit to a two way.
Exactly.
And he bet on himself, and it worked out, right?
Yeah,
like, and
out.
His agent yeah. probably advised him to do so, and that was the right decision. So that's a great example that you brought up. And I think that, you know, hits the nail on the head as far as like the point earlier about everyone's path being different, like, and the agency point, like, you know, there's a lot of things that go into this, and it's not always the 60 yeah. best guys for sure.
Yeah. And that doesn't even touch on things like promises and, you know, it's like guys going, you know, teams maybe, you know, specifically having relationships with players that like that they want to draft or not. And, you know, I mean, there's just so much behind the scenes
yeah.
that, you know, people like Max and I, you know, and most of, you know, the amateur draft enthusiasts, you know, can't really have access to. And therefore, you know, just like that's another factor that, you know, like you have to parse in because it matters, but like, it's just not one that, you know, we can really have access to and, you know, think about. But, you know, it's good to understand, you know, just how important that is to, you know, to teams who are actually, you know, making decisions within the context of the draft. So,
yeah, for sure. And like that, you know, I'm not going to come out here and say I'm like super plugged into everything. Right. But like just getting some surface level, like understanding of how some of that stuff works and like getting to know some of these agents, especially like the kind of mid-market agents, like gives you a better feel for like some of that kind of, you know, less obvious stuff that's kind of working behind the scenes. And that's something that I would probably advise to, you know, anybody who's like, you know, really into the draft or like trying to kind of figure out their way into eventually working in this space. And like, it seems like you, Ben, have, you know, started to develop some of those relationships and like some of your pieces that you're putting out lately, like those have been really awesome. Some of these kind of like guys that are likely to end up in the G League or overseas or whatever, like, you know, getting to know those players, getting to know their agents, like that stuff's all really good. And, you know, as a writer, you know, that behind the scenes stuff, like a lot of people might not, you know, get that sort of access or build those sort of relationships. But if anybody is out there that's like trying to navigate this space, I would advise, you know, at least trying to dip your toes into those waters and get to know some of those people, because it will help you become a more kind of well-rounded like NBA draft evaluator, I would say.
Yeah. Sure. Moving back to the on-court product, one of the things that's most interesting to me with really any sort of combine are the scrimmages. And I think that like often people will actually try to de-emphasize scrimmages because they're weird contexts, but I mean, obviously no one should ever put too much stock in something like that, but they do represent a different and I think evaluative context. So what do you think has stood out to you, John, about, you know, what you've been able to take away from scrimmages as opposed to just watching film from a guy's college or international team?
Yeah. So like, you know, at the PBC, getting the measurements and getting the, you know, combine testing and stuff is great, right? Like that, teams love that stuff. People love seeing the wingspan differential. People love seeing like all that good stuff. It matters, right? But then the scrimmages themselves, I think it's good for kind of like that contact stuff that we were speaking to earlier on the stay or go decisions, like how certain college programs and schemes could impact like, you know, a person's ability to kind of show, you know, the full extent of what they bring to the table or things like that. You kind of get to like wipe a lot of that away and kind of see a player in a a little bit of a less structured environment around similarly talented peers in a kind of hyper competitive setting where they're trying to, like, you know, show out in front of NBA front office staff and personnel, right? So that context right there is just really good to see, like, you know, someone like Isaiah Reese, who played at Canisius, right? He came in and, you know, you don't know what to expect when you have a guy from one of those conferences who has shown some flashes and been pretty intriguing. Like, you don't totally know what to expect when you get him surrounded by, you know, guys who went to Texas and guys who went to, like, all these kind of high major prominent schools, like how they're going to perform in that setting, like both with their teammates that are similarly talented and against other guys that are similarly talented. And so Isaiah Reese, for example, I think he was the player of the day one of the 2 days there. And Ben, you were there. He hit like 9 threes in a scrimmage and, like, was uber confident, hitting like crazy pull-ups, off movement shots, just like looked so comfortable in that environment, right? And, you know, that's, you know, it's a small sample size, Max, like what you were saying earlier, you can't put too much emphasis on it. It's not like you see that happen and you're like, oh, Isaiah Reese, first round pick, but it does make you a little bit more comfortable that, okay, like, this guy is leaving as an underclassman. What's going on there? He plays at Canisius. Like, you know, how do I, you know, contextualize that evaluation amongst other high major guys and stuff, and you see him out there looking so comfortable and confident, that makes you a little bit more comfortable in, you know, giving him an X10, bringing him onto your G League team and knowing that maybe there is some upside for him down the line, right? I think that's where the scrimmages are the most valuable. And one more example I would say is Kenny Williams from UNC was also just a really high performer at last year's PBC in a similar fashion, where, you know, major role player at UNC, like low usage guy, crazy defender, right? But, like, you got to see him outside of that context as well and see a little bit more of what he could do offensively. It's just good to see guys in another light in these scrimmages, you know?
Yeah, I was just Googling Isaiah Reese's numbers quickly to reference them. Yeah, that's the exact example I was thinking of before we even brought it up. I mean, Isaiah Reese at Canisius, you know, more of like a crafty on-ball, like not the greatest athlete, someone who's like a really crafty passer and like finisher and driver, but like not like a crazy volume difficulty shooter. And like you said, like hit 9 threes during the 3v3, I think it was, on day 2 of the PBC and really showed out. So though, like you said, small, like echoing the small sample, but also echoing that, you know, seeing these guys in a context that's not their team context, you know, with the team context, there's so many things that we can't, that like an outsider cannot know, like what are they allowed and not allowed to do, you know, based on their scheme. Like, you know, Isaiah Reese, likely not the shooter that he was at PBC, but, you know, is it possible that, you know, his green light was not as green at Canisius? I mean, sure, that's absolutely possible that, you know, he just wasn't placed in that position to shoot, you know, or do some of the things, you know. And like Kenny Williams, someone who, you know, at UNC, just, you know, with other talented players on the floor, was never a guy who really needed to shoot the ball or, you know, do any of his own offense, and then someone who was able to do that. So just looking for those differences, you know, like Max and I talk about different, like evaluating prospects in different contexts all the time on this show. And, you know, normally we're just talking about like different, you know, like AAU versus high school versus college versus international. You know, I think adding like combine settings is really legitimate because of just like the inherent lack of structure, I think, you know, can be a tell for, like, you know, some of these guys who maybe you're like high feel or, you know, like high IQ or just like just like in like a less nebulous sense, you know, have the ability to adapt.
Yeah, exactly.
To adapt to an unstructured situation and thrive there, you know, like make decisions on the fly, you know, like there's no set plays to run, you know, you're just reading, reacting, playing. And one more point I'd like to make about, you know, this scrimmage. And I think it's really telling, you know, to see which guys, you know, like the intensity that some guys play with versus other guys. I have a memory from last year at PBC. This was after I switched to the right side because for the first like hour I was there, I accidentally sat with the NBA scouts, and I'm going to say that I was manifesting a dream into reality there. But
that was good stuff. I feel like I remember looking across the court and seeing you like plopped right in the middle over there and being like, oh man, this guy is plugged in now.
There was a point where I was like, where I realized like, yeah, I'm in the wrong place, but was also too petrified to move until a friend of the program, Zach Milner, came and saved me. But yeah, the point, you know, remember what's his name? Dante Carruthers, yeah. Buffalo guy, you know, just like he, like his energy and like just on both ends was like head and shoulders above everybody else. And you know, I like there were other guys who, you know, I won't name or genuinely don't remember that, you know, just like didn't play with even close to that same level of energy and intensity. And I think, you know, like that's probably like things like motor and that probably get overlooked, you know, just in like in-game scouting, but especially in these like scrimmages when, you know, there should be no reason not to, you know, give everything is something important, is something worth like considering.
Right.
Yeah. Just like seeing how these guys react to this situation and like do you bring it, like are you gonna like show that you give like 1,000%, as you know, annoying of the cliche that is, it's true, like, you know, seeing which guys, you know, like stand above like this competition level, which is really cool, especially for like the low and mid-major guys who, you know, have, you know, outside of maybe like one or two high major games on their schedule, haven't really played against anyone notable. So
for sure, yeah, I mean, I think the Dante Carruthers was insane. Like, he was next level. Like, I'm probably not even allowed to say what he was saying on this podcast, but he was awesome. Yeah. I love that guy.
I have a video on my phone of him just, like, talking all of the trash, you know, on defense, which is, like I said, I don't want to, you know, I don't know if we can repeat the things, you know, he'd say on the court, but, you know, like it's great to see from an intensity perspective, just to show how much they care, you know, about defense and like how much they want it.
Yeah. Like, and like, that was his rep, but I think, you know, that was his rep coming in, but like, you know, not the most well-known guy coming into the combine. So for him to be like 5 feet away from some scouts for some G League teams and NBA teams and like put on that intensity, it at least like piqued some of those guys' interest in everything.
Yeah, it's a quality trait that, like, especially, you know, for like a 10th, 11th man, you know, like something we don't think about is like even just like for practice, like these are the type of guys that teams are going to want to acquire, just like to challenge the guys who are going to play, you know, in practice every day, you know, like get guys who care and like get guys who work, you know.
Yeah.
When we're scouting and like evaluating prospects, you know, thinking about the guys who aren't going to play helping the other guys is like a thing we never think about.
Yeah.
Like it's certainly a team that like a thing that teams will consider.
So. Yeah. It matters. I mean, that's like, it's the rookie or, you know, young guy version of like having a, you know, Jared Dudley on your team, right? Like the smart vet, like you're adding value to the overall team's like day to day without necessarily being on the court all the time, right? Like if you have a rookie or a young guy that comes in and just like brings that intensity, like there's definitely something to be said for that. And I mean, I think, you know, the work ethic side, I think all of that is what you're seeing with like Chris Silva earning a roster spot with the Heat, right? Like he was at the PBC, you know, goes undrafted, but you know, that guy works his ass off, is physical. I mean, you see it every time he's on the court. He's like battling people for offensive rebounds, like going to the floor, blocking shots, like, you know, and that comes across in these kind of environments and can be really helpful for kind of, you know, a team kind of keeping tabs on you and keeping you in mind, whether it's immediately that year or like just having you in mind for down the line, bringing you up from the G League or something like that.
Yeah, the thing Ben was getting at earlier is definitely the most appealing aspect of a scrimmage to me is that you could, that it's like 100% instincts. Like there are no set plays, nothing. You're playing with teammates that you've probably never played with before. So it really is just like isolating instincts in a way that's very cool. That you don't really get to see. You don't really get to see skills that you're evaluating isolated like that. But there's also the aspect of like, it's, I think it's one thing to be demonstrating like leadership and camaraderie, go pick up teammate up when they're down, you know, with guys that you've been playing with for maybe 2 years that you're really close with, that are your very like good personal friends. But if you're running across the court to go pick someone up that you met 2 hours ago, I think that demonstrates a different level of character, of just a way that you care about fitting into a team. That is just something that organizations, I think, want. And it's something that you can see in that sort of setting, as well as like seeing and hearing defensive communication in a way that you wouldn't necessarily see that fits into that instinctual element as well. I think there are a lot of benefits to scrimmages that really kind of get dismissed because it's not necessarily the best quality basketball. It's not the most polished basketball, but that doesn't mean that it's without value.
And with a 3v3, like it is at PBC, I think of like Portsmouth as like in a similar context, though like even that is like far more structured in terms of like real actual basketball than PBC, because sure. Portsmouth is 5-on-5s and the teams have like some time to practice together. PBC is really just 3v3 into the fire. I think that the 3v3 is interesting, as opposed to having a 5-on-5 scrimmage. Like as we talked about a while back with TJ, like bending the typical rules of a basketball game to challenge a player's, like instincts and IQ and, ability to adapt, that's valuable. And whether or not maybe like teams are conscious of that in the moment, I think it's probably a thing that, you have to think about, like these players who can really like step up and, I think less about the guys who were just like isolating and scoring, tough shots every time. Cause players who do that can also do that in 5-on-5 and 1-on-1.
Yeah.
Players who can really like play within a 3-on-3, I think it's something that's really impressive to me. And one of the guys I think of, you mentioned Alex Robinson earlier, like that's a guy who did that. He was communicating, making plays on the ball, like moving off the ball. I remember that.
Yeah.
And that, I think that's just like speaks to his, intelligence and, like ability to operate as a floor general, like in every sense.
Right. And that was his rep coming in too. Right. But exactly what you're saying, like he's never played with any of these guys except for Desmond, and he wasn't on Desmond's team in that setting. Right. So his ability to, the adaptability that you were talking about, to be able to like pick up any situation and immediately be that guy that's like directing traffic and like, helping guide your team to success, like that's super valuable. And like, we're, all this stuff all sounds like just kind of soft skill, like type things that, a lot of times in our evaluation of prospects, we're spending a lot of our time really digging into the numbers, digging into the film. But this is like the side of things that gets lost a lot of the times. And obviously you need to play, right? Like that, the skill, the talent, all that stuff like comes first. But if you, yeah, I think the scrimmages definitely bring this stuff to the forefront, and it definitely is important, especially for rookies trying to like navigate the starts of their careers.
As sports keep coming back, so does your chance to bet on them with our exclusive wagering partner, betonline.ag. Major League Baseball will soon be in full swing, and there are no shortage of ways to get in on the action. BetOnline has all the odds, futures, and props for you to bet on. Also, tune in as Floyd Money Mayweather joins the BetOnline team in a new segment called The Ice is Right, where he talks about his expansive jewelry collection. He'll give you the chance to win some great prizes and bet on the cost of his bling. Visit betonline.ag to check out all the odds and up-to-date sports news. Don't forget to sign up and take advantage of all the welcome back sports bonuses. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. 2020 has been the year of things happening that are completely out of your control. But there is one thing you can control, and that's shaving your bush. Our sponsors at Manscaped are here to remind you to do so. The Manscaped Lawnmower 3.0 is a premium electric trimmer that's designed to give you a confidence boost through body image. Their ceramic blade and skin-safe technology are designed to reduce nicks or tugs on your fellas down low. The Lawnmower 3.0 is also waterproof and comes with an LED light so you can manscape in the shower, in the dark, or in a dark shower, whatever floats your boat. They also just released their Shears 2.0 nail kit, which is the perfect add-on to their Lawnmower 3.0 trimmer. In fact, listeners of this show will get 20% off plus free shipping with the code armchair at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code armchair. It's time to grab 2020 by the horns by shaving that front trunk.
So now let's move on to kind of the opposite of these scrimmages. I guess in the wake of the entire world shutting down, It's kind of hard to host a combine, which is a large gathering of people from all over.
Pretty tough. Yeah. Let me tell you.
But you guys have pivoted very well to remote film rooms, similar to what Mike Schmitz has been doing with ESPN. But I think your volume of them is a lot higher. And I think they're probably a little more tailored to the draft nerds. But you've done a spectacular job with them, and we've shouted them out before on the podcast because they really are they're must watch. So what have you learned from doing these film rooms with prospects? Like what do you think you've gained as like insight into evaluating some of these guys from breaking down film with them?
Yeah. So first of all, appreciate the support. Appreciate you watching them. You know, that was something definitely new for me, but once the pandemic started and, one of the first things that, after the obvious things that you think of, like, all of us are obsessed with basketball. And I obviously thought, like, what is this going to mean for the pre-draft process? What's it going to mean for the PBC, all of that? And so, started thinking what I could do to kind of fill the void. And I remember like kicking the idea around, playing around with some different softwares and stuff, testing it out with Jake, seeing what we could do. And then like I was supposed to film with Desmond Bain the next day, and then Mike Schmitz releases a teaser for his thing. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like now I got to compete with Schmitz. But no, I mean, I think it works perfectly, right? Like similar to the NBA combine and the PBC, like both are serving their purpose. Like Mike Schmitz, he's awesome at these things, and he gets these lottery level guys and first round guys to come on. I take the guys that are more, second round, fringe first round, two way type guys, overseas guys. And it's been a really good experience. And, I think that it's really useful to like, this is a thing that's different than the things we were talking about with being at the PBC and the value that can be attained from that kind of stuff. I think it's really valuable to like go through film with players and kind of hear them express like, how they make reads and how they think about different situations, how they react to different situations, like why they did a certain thing the way they did it. Like I figured that would be pretty interesting, but then when you like do it for like 35 different players, like seeing the stark variances from player to player and like how they approach things, the extent with which they value film, like what they've been taught to do in certain situations by their coaches, like what their gut instincts are, like all that stuff has been really interesting and really valuable, I think. That's the first thing that comes to mind. And then again, on like the intel side and everything, like you get a feel for the person, you get a feel for their personality, you get a feel for, some guys are like super buttoned up and sharp and like good communicators and, are right on time or are early for the film sessions versus other ones you have to, reschedule a bunch or they're late or leave you hanging. Like you get a feel for like what these guys are like off the court and like what they'd be like to deal with as a front office or a coach or something like that. And, so it's again, like a kind of unique situation with COVID, but being able to jump in and do these with all these players, I'm like really grateful that, they've been willing to put themselves out there in this kind of setting. And definitely, I think it's been a valuable experience both for myself and for the players.
Yeah, and I think just the thing for me that I take away the most is definitely what you're talking about, watching, especially, I it's just fun for all these players. Definitely like the very like IQ feel heavy type of players where you're just like getting insights into like how they think the game, the way they think. I remember last year like Cole Zwicker had a piece about Grant Williams basically like foreshadowing the need for like these film rooms and like gosh what I would do to have one of these with Grant Williams. But
Grant,
like
Grant, come on Prep to Pro Challenge.
Grant, please come on Prep to Pro Challenge. Yeah, but I mean like he talked about just like is this incredible pass, was that instinct, was that a coverage that they saw on film that they're reacting to, was it a coverage that they saw earlier in the game they're reacting to, was it an accident, like there's no way to really know without without being in their minds. And like, this is like a really rare opportunity to be in the minds of these players. And, you know, like, you know, you see, oh, maybe that kick to the short roll was installed in the scheme, or maybe it was totally freelance. And I think, you know, like, that's like a tangible thing you can take away as like an outside evaluator, like, you know, just understanding to what level these guys are really as instinctual we think they are or think they aren't when we're independently watching on film. Because, like, again, like, there's holes in their brain. You know, we think we're good at, you know, understanding the function of a guy's instincts, but truly it's impossible to know the full extent of it without, you know, being inside of their head. You know, being able to do that is super cool and super, super valuable, and just so much fun to watch. Like, it's so entertaining.
I think exactly what you're saying. Like, a lot of these plays, you know, people who know basketball, you can kind of decipher what's happening, you see what's happening off ball, and like, you can kind of anticipate, you know, what the player is probably going to say when you present them with a certain play in these film rooms, right? But like, sometimes the depth to which they'll explain it, or like, will be even more robust than you could have imagined, or maybe there was something else that like I didn't notice in it when we decided to include the play. And it's just really cool to have that back and forth and like really get a feel for like the extent with which these guys are students of the game, and like the extent with which most of them are like really good dudes. Like, I've been really impressed with a lot of these guys. Like, they're, a lot of them are really smart, sharp, like polite, nice young dudes, and like, I'm excited for them to start all of their professional careers. Like, you know, it's just really cool to see like how excited these guys are to like kickstart everything, even in these like unique circumstances. Like, we'll definitely be rooting for these guys that have come on and like been vulnerable in that setting and like talked through everything with me.
Yeah. And quickly, you know, we're going to talk more about specific guys in a bit, but like, the point you made about, you know, noticing things that like you didn't even notice on the clip is fascinating to me. And like, one of my favorite parts of watching these, because, you know, like a lot of the times, you know, I will have seen these games and these clips before and remember these plays. But then, like, you know, the one I think about, we're going to talk about this guy later, Freddie Gillespie out of Baylor.
Yeah.
Who, like, his film room was one of my favorites. He, like, early, you had, I think, one of the first play you had, I watched this morning as a refresher, so I should know this. At the beginning of the Gillespie one, I think the first play you guys showed was like an empty side pick and roll where he set a screen with like the three on the weak side and dunked it or whatever. And then like there was a play later where it was the same setup on the weak side, but the focus wasn't on the screening, it was on like his mid-range shooting.
Right.
But Freddie mentioned that he was like, oh, I wish Jared Butler would have used the screen so I could roll and dunk, because it was the same setup. And like, that was the thing that I like did not notice, despite having like not only watched the beginning of the film room, but like, having seen that game myself. And like, it's just such a cool, you know, like learning, like not only like learning about these players, but like learning from them, like improving your own eye is like such a valuable and cool thing. Like, to me, it's awesome.
And with Freddie in particular, because I watched that one last night and I messaged you guys after and said that I would die for Freddie Gillespie after watching that film room, because he was so like charismatic and intelligent. But there was a possession where he was posting up and they sent like a stunt at him basically. And I think he discontinued his dribble and kind of panicked and threw it away. And immediately he's just like, well, I should have just recognized that wasn't even a hard double coming to me. They were just stunting at me. Right. I should have just ignored it. And then he went into all the different things that he could have done, that he could have pass faked and hit a cutter. Like, there were just so many things going through his mind that he was very self-critical in a constructive way. That was really impressive. Just really, really aware. And I just found him to be so impressive in his confidence and self-awareness that he was very confident in his ability to fill a particular role, but wasn't delusional. Like, didn't think that he was some on-ball creator. Like, he knows exactly what he is and is very confident in his ability to do that. And I think that that's something that's obviously invaluable to have as a role player. The other thing with him is that I think he offered some insight into their scheme that is like, it's the one thing that I think is most difficult about being like an outside amateur evaluator is that you don't know what someone is actually being asked to do. Like the holy grail for a draft Twitter person, I think, would be to have a description for every single possession ever played of what a guy was supposed to do.
Right.
Because everything that you're doing when evaluating that is you're making inferences about what a guy was probably supposed to do.
Yeah.
But I mean, like to give a concrete example, like Villanova, their defense is very conservative. They don't bring a lot of help. Like everyone stays kind of stapled to their man. And so there are tons of instances when you're watching Villanova that I would want Sadiq Bey to stunt or dig or something like that. And he doesn't do anything to impact a ball handler while he's playing off the ball. But that's not really his fault. Like he's not being told to do that. And so have, you know, on a play-by-play basis, being able to have something like that cleared up, that I think Freddie in particular mentioned, like he was told as the big man, as a help defender, to just like go get the ball, always go get the ball. Mm-hmm. And I think I wouldn't necessarily say to do that. Like if a guy is kind of has a man, his man on his hip and is coming down the lane and you can maybe stunt at him and he'll shoot a kind of tough floater as opposed to getting all the way to the rim. And then maybe you have your own man is not boxed out if you then go to heavily contest that. You know, I would probably want someone to stunt and force the floater, but if that's not what he's being told to do, that's not really his fault. It's hard to knock him for that. So knowing that sort of thing is really valuable. And since you're not going to have, you know, some holy grail where you're told what a guy was supposed to do on every single possession, having a player there who can explain why he took the actions that he took is really like of incredible value to just getting a complete picture when you necessarily have incomplete information.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Freddie certainly stood out in that regard, right? Like he pretty much every play was able to rattle off like multiple elements that led to certain, you know, things being available, or to your point, like what he maybe could have done better. Like some, you know, most guys have been pretty good about this, but you know, some guys can freeze up a little bit when you're going through like a negative play or something, whereas others are like, you know, oh, I remember that from watching film during the year, or I remember coach getting on me about that. And, you know, this, and this is what I could have done better. And like, that's something that I am working on right now during my pre-draft process to try to improve X, Y, and Z. Like the guys that have that kind of mentality, like that really stands out to me a lot. And, you know, when I have some discussions with like NBA teams about my impressions of some of these players, like the ones that are able to, you know, express themselves like that, have that self-awareness and, you know, have a really good understanding of the role that they theoretically could fill at the next level, like that goes, you know, so far for me and like, you know, projecting them going forward. That's like a key element versus somebody who has some sort of like misguided or warped view of like, you know, where they could potentially add value or what they bring to the table or what their role is, right? And Freddie, I remember him saying, I'm not a low maintenance guy, I'm a no maintenance guy. And I was joking with him like after the fact about that, like we got to get that on a t-shirt or something, we got to get that branded. And then he went on and did an interview with Vicini recently, and he said the same thing. So that's the Freddie Gillespie brand going forward. Not a low maintenance guy, a no maintenance guy. And I believe him.
Yeah. I think that's like makes a really interesting point about, you know, like just another value of these film rooms is like getting an inside look into like the work ethic of some of these guys. And that's like like work ethic is one of, if not the most important factor in prospect in player development that we can pretty much get no idea outside of like stories we hear from people. But outside of that, it's really impossible to know what a guy's work ethic is without, well, you know, I think it's even more valuable than talking to them, because, you know, a guy can easily tell you that, you know, he has an awesome work ethic and give you examples of how he works. But, you know, if a prospect can prove that,
by like proving that like they've watched this film and they know what's coming and like that they've seen this play before and they've thought about this play and they've like been critical with themselves about, all right, like what does this play mean for me and how can I learn from it? Like that's the thing that matters to me as like an evaluator. I mean, like we'll just stay on the, like I'll just keep talking about Freddie Gillespie. Like clearly someone who has like watched that film before,
yeah,
and like understands like what and like watched it, understands what he's seeing, and like understands like what it means. And I think that not every PBC like film room guy is like that. I mean, like, like John said, like many of them are like very impressive, mm-hmm. come up as very intelligent and very well learned and have watched film. But there are some that like it seems like much more than others that, you know, either like they didn't know what the play was beforehand.
Yeah.
They
like didn't there's
have that much insight.
Yeah. There's some that like, I kind of would have to like guide a little bit through it or kind of prompt to, you know, what maybe to address about the play for sure. Like, and yeah. You know, I'd say on the whole, I've been super impressed, but yeah, you can tell if you yeah. watch through the entire array of them, like, yeah. you know, who's really on it and who's sharp and who like really values film study. Like it definitely stands out.
Yeah.
One more thing that I definitely have appreciated throughout the process is even if it's like a positive play, like a positive outcome of a play, some guys still talk you through the full process of what's going on and like, you know, what other options might have been available to them if the defense had reacted differently. Like if someone's running a pick and roll and like, you know, they end up making a skip to the weak side based on an overhelp or something, they're also kind of like pointing out like X, Y, and Z other things that are happening in the play. And maybe if this guy, you know, would not have tagged the roll man, then I would have found this guy over here. Like, you know, kind of like laying out the array of options on a given play, even though they ended it with a positive outcome, I think is particularly interesting and shows like the depth with which they understand the game.
Yeah, it sounds like Desmond Bing.
Yeah, that's right.
Because, with him, it was cool because it really was, you're getting into his whole decision-making process, because this is the key variable that I'm looking at in this situation, and here is the consequence of what I see, and, you know, and also addressing the counterfactual there. So I thought that was a really cool way of really getting into his decision-making process. And honestly, throughout all of the film rooms with all of these guys, I do find it, their recollection is incredible. Like the way that they can get back into their own thought process and tell you what they were thinking, what they were seeing is really impressive. And it just like speaks to the just incredibly high level of pattern recognition and whatnot that these guys have, to be, you know, decision makers that are thriving at the NCAA level.
Yeah. And sometimes on the negative plays, like at the outset of a negative play, before you can even tell, like when we're going through like the improvement areas or whatever, like seeing a guy's reaction before the play even gets started, he'll like cover his face up or put his hands on his head. Like he knows that he's about to do something not so good. Like these guys, they all have like pretty good attitudes about it though, and are like pretty mostly self-reflective and like can recall plays pretty well and like how to best, you know, learn from it and move forward.
Yeah. And I mean, frankly, just being willing to go on something like this is a good sign as to a guy's character. The fact that at some level they're willing to try to learn from the past, to study their film. I mean, yeah, like at the start of Freddie Gillespie's, there's a moment that sticks out to me where he's like, yeah, the whole quarantine process has not been fun, and it hasn't been for anyone, but it's been a great opportunity to watch film, and if you haven't been watching film, you've been wasting this,
right?
And I think that's a really like very positive approach, obviously, to be taken to a tough situation, is that this is something I wouldn't have normally had the opportunity to not really play basketball and just study a lot of film, and now I'm going to capitalize on this weird situation and turn it into a positive.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the teams, you know, the teams in the NBA that are doing their due diligence, like they'll find all that out. Like they'll know which players have been making the most of like a very unfamiliar landscape. And I think that, again, circles back to the adaptability point that we hit on earlier, right? Like whoever's the most adaptable, I think, is really going to shine through in this rookie class.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one more point on Freddie Gillespie here. This is quickly turning into the Freddie Gillespie episode, but that's okay. But I mean, you mentioned earlier about prompting to prompt some guys. I think it's really fun when guys kind of like prompt you.
Yes.
And like reverse it. I remember one of the Freddie Gillespie, like at one point in the Gillespie one, you were going through like his offensive rebounding, and you had like you finished what you had to say, and you had an extra clip of an offensive rebound, and you know, you're like, oh, here's one more offensive rebound, and then he like unprompted dives into like what he was thinking there and
yeah.
like, what move. I think it was like the one against TCU where he had like the lefty put back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like he goes into the like oh, like why he didn't pass it out, why he decided to shoot there, like how he did that, and like you didn't even ask him to do that. Like you were just ready to transition to the next thing.
Yeah,
like, he went out of his way to like, you know, go through his thought process. You know what he did well, what he could have done better in that situation. And he like speaks to me as someone who like truly like not only like understands the value of film and is like a hard worker, but like enjoys it and like enjoys learning about like himself and the game of basketball, which, you know, is obviously, you know, very positive thing for, you know, especially a role player and like a guy who's going to be like a positive locker room presence, you know, be enthusiastic about that, about those kind of things, you know, on like that could be more monotonous on like a day-to-day basis.
For sure. And those are some of my favorite film rooms are the ones where I can kind of like put it on cruise control and like know that the player is, like, I'm not going to have to prompt them on anything. Like the ones that really know what's going on, like, you know, just goes to the next clip and they immediately start diving into what they're thinking. Like you can tell these guys just like love it. So those are definitely my favorites. And Freddie was definitely one of those.
Yeah. On the topic of offensive rebounding, I think we do have to go to podcast favorite Nate Hinton. If you talk about getting into thought process, this one was really fascinating to me because I think that rebounding it's often not given much attention. And I think that that's honestly fair sometimes, except in the case of guys who are exceptional like Nate Hinton. And so learning about his thought process of knowing teammate tendencies as a way to,
yeah.
So he's not just reading the ball. He's reading that, okay, this is my teammate who's a very good shooter. So it's not going to be a left, right miss. And
right.
It's early in the game. He's going to have fresh legs. So he's probably not going to miss short. So I'm going to get a jump on this because I am so well informed and so quickly able to process all of this information and make a decision based on it that it's not just that Nate Hinton is a crazy motor, that he's very long, that he's like a good vertical leaper and very strong. All of those things matter, but it's also that his thought process on it is very intricate. And I thought that was a really cool thing to see.
Yeah. And I think that kind of becomes second nature for him after a while. Like he expressed it to us there, but I think he's just like so quickly processing all of that as plays are happening. And to be able to like think that quickly on your feet and then kind of act on it physically and like be so like assertive and aggressive and go high point the ball and like fight for position for a guy who's like 6'5" is just insanely impressive. Like Nate Hinton is the man. I love that dude. He's like very, very fun to talk basketball with. And, you know, he's also got like the little bit of a little Southern accent going on there. So he's got he's just like a very endearing guy. Like I really enjoyed speaking with him. And like what the one part that stood out to me is when he was like coming in from the help side against Washington, they tried lobbing it into the paint to Isaiah Stewart. And he's like, he got up there and got the ball and like pulled it away from Stewart. And when he was describing it, he's like, the scouting report, Isaiah Stewart, he's a man child. And we knew on the scouting report, we didn't want to wrestle with him. I was just dying, man. Like that, he's just like a super funny, cool dude that like, you know, he's a guy that like I run a super thorough analysis before the season for identifying potential rising sophomores that could warrant early entry into the draft that are like, you know, outside the consensus top 60 or whatever. And Hinton was a guy who popped on that. And he, you know, he just really, really impressed, man. That guy, like, you can tell he cares. And to the self-awareness point that we were talking about earlier, like, he was one of the ones that definitely stood out to me in that regard, and that he's saying, like, you know, I don't need the ball. I don't need a high usage role. Like, I don't care, like, what my minute load is. Like, I am willing to come in and play really hard, knock down some corner threes, catch and shoot threes, hit the glass, and just defend my ass off. And, like, that is his, you know, projectable role. And he is, like, aware of that. And he's happy with that. Like, he's not trying to be something that he's not. He's trying to, like, master his role, which I think is, you know, something, like, that he should be proud of, that he is, like, taking this leap. A lot of people didn't expect him to enter the draft, but he's entering it with a good mindset, knowing who he is and what he brings to the table.
Yeah, I'm glad that you tabbed him as a potential breakout guy, because he was one of my guys as well. I think I maybe even had him too high. I had him, like, top 35 coming into the year or something like that.
I did, but too, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I've got him in that range still. We're very big Nate Hinton fans.
I mean, if you believe that he's going to stick, then having him top 35 is reasonable, right? Like, if you just think how many guys actually end up sticking out of any given draft class, that's not crazy, right? Like, you know, that's higher than most would have him. And I understand both sides of the coin, but, like, if you believe that he's going to stick, then that's not crazy, right?
Yeah. I mean, something we've talked about with him in the past is that I think the rebounding actually does matter, because, and it's something that he got at on the film room, that he thinks he can defend 1 through 4. And part of that with the 4 part is that he can credibly, like, rebound as well.
Yeah.
And just with his size, strength, and instincts, and especially instincts really, really, like, shined through with him on this, that he described a lot of the crazy off-ball defense plays that he made as instincts. Instincts just kicked in. And you totally see that with him, that he's a highly instinctual player. So it was very cool to have that confirmed. But yeah, I think that he has a very good grasp of who he is, which, you know, as a guy who's 6'5", and ostensibly a guard, maybe the expectation would be that he's some sort of creator, but that's not who he is. He's an awesome player in spite of that, but he's not, you know, your normal 6'5" guard necessarily.
Right.
Yeah. So the one more thing that I found really interesting with him was that he said that coming into Houston, he's really comfortable with on ball defense, but he was still kind of learning how to play off the ball.
Yeah.
And that's a fascinating thing to me, because I think of him as such a good off ball defensive player. Right. And the fact that right now, to him, I guess that's really just playing off instincts, and that he's still learning to do that is kind of terrifying to think.
Yeah,
it's kind of terrifying to think what he could be, because he is a really, really high impact guard, wing, off ball defender.
Yeah, for sure. And, like, you never know. Like, I can't recall offhand what high school he went to or anything, but, like, you never know, like, what a high school program is preaching on defense, or if they're teaching, like, very sound off ball principles or anything. So maybe he wasn't really that exposed to it when he was young, but, like, he just kind of has good instincts baseline and didn't even realize that till he got to Houston and, like, the program was really harping on it. And then he kind of took it to heart even more. Right. But, you know, it's good to know that a guy has good instincts and that he's able to, like, build upon them.
That's something so appealing, you know, about all of these guys, with, you know, all these young prospects, freshmen, sophomores, with the awesome instincts, because I think it's just the case that most freshmen and sophomores and like teenagers are not, like, good at the minutia of off-ball defense. And just, like, seeing guys who, like, know that and, like, want to learn about it and yet are already so impactful just, like, based on their instincts, like, it's just another reason, like you said, like to bet on Nate Hinton to stick and, you know, just to find a role somewhere in the NBA one day.
Yeah.
I was really glad that you highlighted that, the entry to Stewart, because it's one of my favorite like prospect plays from the year, and it just highlights that he's all, like, processing speed and instincts, and then also just, like,
and he's strong as shit. Like,
he's so strong. He's a really good and fun player, and that's another PBC film room that all of the listeners should check out. With that, we're going to cut part one And then we'll hop back on in a few minutes for us, but a couple days for the listeners, and talk some more film rooms, future of PBC, and some other stuff. So, Ben, you wanna outro us?
Yeah, I mean, again, thank you so much to John for spending his day with us talking about PBC. You can follow, you know, the PBC on Twitter at ProBballCombine. Follow John personally at John Chep. John, is there anything else you'd like to plug or anything you want to say?
No, that's all I got, man. Appreciate you guys having me on.
Awesome, man. So, yeah, thank you all for listening. You can follow the pod at Prep2ProPod on Twitter. Follow me at Ben_Pfeiffer_. Follow Max at Max@Carlin. And with that, thank you all for listening and have a good day.